You know, I don't have that record. I'll buy it for 40. We're out.
So, now why would you sell it to me and not to him?
Because you're not a geek, Lewis.
You guys, it's not.
No, we're not.
Seriously, you're totally elitist. You feel like the unappreciated scholars, so you shit on the people who know less than you.
No.
Which is everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining the Smartass Supernova podcast. This is episode 22 already. I am Eric, your socially awkward host, and today I am joined by Matt from NY Vinyl and Brew.
All right, Matt, thanks for joining me. Introduce Matt here. Quick background. I was on Instagram and your sister that I know, and we all kind of worked together years ago. Was posting a lot of this NYVB, and I'm like, what is going on here? And I finally looked into it, and I see it's, well, I'll let you explain it more. But Matt, you're with New York Vinyl and Brew, and why don't you go ahead and give your plug there and introduce yourself and what you're all about.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we, exciting thing just to note too, is this week we officially have an LLC. So, you know, we're able to get that going. It's Vinyl and Brew LLC so that we can potentially go nationwide, which would be really, really cool. But essentially, you know, it's a buddy and I, we both have been big vinyl collectors, especially him. I mean, his collection is crazy. Puts mine to shame. But when he came back, he lived in California. Mm-hmm. We're sitting at a coffee shop and we're talking about records and music because, I mean, that's the bread and butter of our friendship, essentially. And we were like, oh, it'd be really cool, you know, to sit down and listen to a record and then kind of talk about it with people and, you know, do some research and digging and, like, you know, have things to discuss. And that's how the idea started, and doing it at, like, you know, cafes and kind of making it like a, you know, check this record out, what do you think? And that was actually what the first one was. And then we learned pretty quickly that people might not be as nerdy as we are and might not enjoy that as much. So it kind of grew into this thing where we curate based on whatever the theme of the night would be. And we'll bring, you know, two, sometimes three crates of records. One of them's his, one of them's mine. And, you know, we basically want people to look through the records. We want you to ask us questions. We want you to tell us how much you like them or how much you dislike this band, or just to bring that interaction to it. And we want you to tell us what you want to hear. So, you know, it's nice that we curate it ourselves so that we're pretty happy with everything we bring. So we won't get any requests where we're like, oh, I don't want to hear that. Although John would say he never wants to hear Eminem, but I bring it to almost every event.
Early Eminem or later Eminem?
Well, I brought it to our emo night especially, and people would argue with me, what is Eminem doing here? And I said, well, he's an emo boy. He's definitely emo. If you listen to Kim, that's an emo song. And I know that some people will disagree, but he complains about his mom and his relationship with her and his girlfriend. Every song's emo. Like, I will die on that hill.
I never thought about it. I don't know if I necessarily agree with you, but I see your reasoning. So, and that's what I'm trying to build here with all about is I like the discussion, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not about, no, your music is terrible. It's not about that. I can find reason why I like the stuff that I like. And I'll talk about ad nauseum with anybody why I love what I love. I find it's wrong. And I always, you know, when you're younger, you're always against, you know, what's popular or what, you know. But now I've kind of, as I've gotten older, tend to listen more and want to find out why people like what they like.
Yeah.
Not for me to put it down. So how did you wind up getting involved with, you know, breweries and coffee houses and things like that?
So we were thinking of what would make the most sense. And because we had the idea and we're talking about it inside Mimi's in Mount Kisco, great coffee shop, great person. We were thinking it over and saying, oh, it would be cool to do it at cafes. And then neither of us actually drink, but we were like, you know, breweries would be a cool place because that's where like, you know, we're in our early 30s now. So mm-hmm. that's where people go. They're more willing to go out to a brewery. And, you know, I knew a couple people that were in the brewery scene, and it just seemed like a good mix. And, you know, we have the name Vinyl and Brew because it could be interchangeable. It could be coffee, it could be alcohol, you know, it doesn't really matter. And, you know, that's a way of kind of combining the two things where, you know, music and then, you know, at this age, people are talking about what beers they like or, you know, what breweries they're into. And, you know, our generation is essentially the first to have the internet at the capacity that we have it. And it allows you to kind of dive deep into the things that you like on a grand scale, right? Rather than, you know, back in the day, you liked a thing and then you would, you know, learn a lot about that one thing. But now we're almost all professionals in everything where, you know, you can Google it and be like, oh, that's really cool. Like, I didn't know I needed this kind of needle, or, oh, I should check out this brewery because I saw it on Reddit. Like, it's interesting because we have access to everything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we definitely live in the, you know, definitely the brewery, microbrew, whatever you want to call it, time where there's so much variation in so many things that somebody can like and not like. It's definitely,
oh, forget it.
It's weird because we live in the world where everything's becoming, you know, the massive corporations of your Amazon, your Ticketmaster, your monopolies there. But at the same time, there's such and I don't want to call it an underground because it's not an underground, but there's so much diversity out there and what you can choose to love and do. And, you know, it's like the days of the radio are over, but you can find anything you want. And then I'll get into those questions later.
But
I like to ask what people are into. And at the same time, where are you finding stuff? Because me is in my early 40s. I find it hard to find new stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like ever since Instagram and social media, and I've been saying this ever since, you know, I'm in my early 20s, I would start to get tattooed. My friends were all getting tattooed. And we said, there's no reason to have a bad tattoo anymore. And it's kind of the same thing that could translate into, you know, beer, coffee. You know, there are people that like certain types of coffees, whatever, you know, they're not really into it. But if you're into coffee, you like drinking it, there's no reason to like bad coffee anymore. There's no reason to not know about some of these places like a counterculture or, you know, abracadabra. Like, there's so many ways of finding good coffee, or so many ways. I mean, local places now all have tons of like these craft beers on their list. And, you know, you're able to kind of look into it and they'll tell you about it. There's no reason to like bad things anymore, I think. And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, that whole millennial generation is broke, because we need to have the, like, oh, I have this really expensive coffee that I buy that's $30 for 12 ounces. That's something that other generations didn't really do because right. They didn't know about it. They just had whatever coffee was down the street, or they went to the tattoo shop that was down the street. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of changed. And now, you know, we'd like to think better taste, but now we just have empty pockets.
You're always going to have something. I drank a lot and smoked for 20 years. And then I found, oh, well, I quit, you know, quit smoking, really cut back on the drinking, and found, I have all this extra money in my pocket. Bills got paid nice. And then you just find other habits. And vinyl was one of those habits that I got.
Cool.
Yeah. We'll get into that in a little bit. I really want to kind of stick with your venture here. When did you start? Can you describe kind of the growth of, you know, kind of grew from, you know, well, go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, I threw out all of my friendships, all of my, you know, teenage and 20s and early 30s. I always like knowing, like you said, you know, it's cool when people like certain music and it's, you know, interesting. And I've always tried to be like the Pandora to a lot of people, where if I know your taste in music, I want to suggest something you may not have ever heard of. And I've always liked doing that because, you know, there are some people where they find their music and then they just ride it out. And I'm guilty. You know, there's some bands that I'll always listen to, and, you know, albums that I love forever and will have always playing, and they'll always be on my Spotify top 100. But I like finding new bands and you know, checking out their discography or seeing similar artists to that, or, you know, just venturing out and trying to like expand that to my friend group. And, you know, one of the events that we had back in October, it was like a Halloween event at Sing Sing Kill in Austining. I put on a band that I had found from Norway. They're called Blood Command, and they were kind of like, they call themselves like death pop, and they've gone through, you know, three different female singers. And when I found that band, I listened to that album so much within the course of, I don't know, a couple of months, that like they were in my top 10 on my top 100. Yeah, after just a few months. So it was crazy. And when I played it at Sing Sing Kill, because, you know, we had the crowd that was similar to our type of music, a couple people were like, what was that? And my friend was like, oh, they're curious about this band. And even though that's only happened like once, I love that. Like, I like sharing music that I think is cool, because it is hard to sometimes find artists once you're so set in your ways. I mean, there are people that won't really look out for other music. And, you know, doing that, it's nice that we have themed and events like that, where, you know, we have specifics that we have to listen to, but, you know, being able to kind of share and suggest music, even at the events, if we don't play something and people walk over and they'll say, oh, you know, I love this album, I'll say, have you ever heard of this? And they'll, you know, respond whether it's good or bad. And I really enjoy that part of it. I think that, you know, that's my part that I can contribute, that and like the business end and the Instagram. And then, you know, John's the guy that's able to like dial in when it comes to the records, and he knows so much about them. He knows like about different releases, and, you know, he has such a great collection, and he's really good, you know, with the actual, like, you know, picking everything out and getting it playing, and, you know, coming up with what we should get and just contribute. It's 50-50. It's such a good, you know, partnership in this way. And he does get mad when I call him my partner, but I think that it's a good split between the two of us.
So you talked about specialty nights, right? What some of the specialty nights you've done, recurring ones you plan on doing in the future?
So we have a 90s night coming up the end of the month, March 31st, at Run and Hide, which we did once, I think it was in February or end of January. And that, we didn't have a theme for the first time we went there, and we were able to kind of just play whatever. And, you know, it's nice being able to do that, but, you know, we have 90s night coming up there, which is going to be pretty fun, because we've really, you know, gotten a ton of 90s stuff, like all over the place. I mean, you name it, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, all the basics, but then we also got some deep cuts. I got some nice 90s hip hop and R&B, you know, we got some Aaliyah. It'll be a really nice night to kind of see what people want to hear. Then we're going to be doing a tattoo convention on April 1st and April 2nd in Poughkeepsie. It's Hudson Valley Tattoo Convention. We're only doing a couple of hours Saturday and Sunday. And then we have an 80s prom night coming up in April at Sing Sing Kill, which that's kind of like our home base now. It's going to be, you know, encouraged to dress up. We did a Halloween event there in October, and it was a great turnout, and it was a lot of fun, because, you know, Halloween's always great. We had some people dressing up. They looked fantastic. And it's nice being able to interact with people at these like themed events, because you already know you all have that one thing in common, you know, that's the interest in, you know, if you're a 90s kid, or, you know, if you love Halloween. It was just, it's a nice idea, and we're trying to come up with some new ones. You know, I want to do like a Tony Hawk's music kind of nice. Themed night.
Yes. The
and maybe do like
soundtrack.
Yes. Cause there's so much there, and there's so much room for like hip hop and punk, and, you know, maybe try to do it with like a skate demo, like set something up and have, you know, local skaters come out. It would just be, I want it to, you know, include a lot. I don't want it to be just, you know, we're DJing and that's how it's going to be. No, you know, we want anything and everything to be included.
Right. It's so easy, and people just so much want you to fit into a box, so they know this is what it is all the time. And I applaud you for that. You, as much as you can, grow and diversify, and just, that's fantastic. It's funny. I was up, and I've been to Sing Sing Kill Brewery, and that's a fantastic brewery. I was up there with a buddy of mine a couple of years ago. That's a great brewery. And it's funny you brought up an 80s night or a prom 80s night, which is fantastic. And I'm kind of stuck in between the Gen X and millennial. I don't really belong to anything, but my, you know, I still remember my parents in, you know, in the 80s. And one, I was one Halloween, we never did it, but a bunch of my friends, we all talked about everybody dresses up as their parents for Halloween. You know, grow the mustache and wear the Canadian tuxedo and do all that. So that's a really fun idea. That's great that you're doing that.
Yeah, I mean, and decade stuff is cool because then you can have stuff like Madonna and then also have Metallica. And, you know, that's it allows so much. And like, I used to love talking about music to a lot of people where I'd say, oh, you know, name some of the best first albums. And then you'll start going and you'll talk to each other and be like, oh man, that's a great question. And then, you know, you'll have arguments where I was like, oh, Pantera's Cowboys from Hell is great. And they're like, oh, that's not really their first album. I said, but it is as Pantera. And then you start getting into like that conversation and it's just a lot of fun to be able to like kind of ask questions like that. And, you know, I like that about Instagram where you can kind of do things like that and do like polls. And, you know, I'll do these things sometimes where I'll zoom in really close on album covers and say like, what album is this? And it stumps a lot more people than you'd think. I used to do one where I would do words that kind of sound like albums and see if people could guess that way too. But, you know, it's fun, you know, making music more than just, you know, passive. You know, a lot of people just will have it on or, you know, but like vinyl itself is an active way of listening to music. It's, you can't just sit down and put it on and then ignore it because then it's going to, you know, just finish and sit there and you have to get up, you have to switch sides. You have this tangible piece of music, you know, the sleeve on the inside. There's just so much to it where you can't just put it on in the background and ignore it, which a lot of music's turning into because it's so readily available.
I was just talking to my girlfriend about that. And we list, you know, every once in a while, like a new music will come on or the Grammys will be on or something. And you listen, everything I've listened to is just become that. It's background music. And I struggle with wanting to do things while I put vinyl on because you do have to physically stop what you're doing. So I do understand the streaming stuff. While you're physically working out, doing something, I get that. But when I want to get into something, you know, read the liner notes, read the lyrics, which I grew up, that's what I did. You read the music, you know. What drew you back into vinyl? When did you get into vinyl? Because we grew up, there wasn't a vinyl world. You know, vinyl was super specialized back then. What drew you back into vinyl?
So my collection itself started in college, early years in college, because I would listen to these bands that weren't big. They did not do well. You know, they weren't massive bands. And I would buy their records because that was a way of supporting them, just like wearing band merch. I mean, I was always buying their t-shirts and then I would start to buy the records because I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, because I feel like those bands were ahead of it. Right? They were ahead of the idea of vinyl coming back because they've been making these records still for so long. And now you're starting to see things like Dua Lipa and, you know, Justin Timberlake and Instinct putting out a pressing. And, you know, you have all of these newer artists that are hopping onto it. But, you know, back in 2010, 2011, you have these bands like Basement, Title Fight, Balance and Composure, Sea Haven. You have these bands putting out vinyl. And it was a way of like, you know, I'll spend $25 on this record and hold on to it. And now I still have those. So it's cool having that first pressing. It's cool, you know, being able to support them and have that even before I had a player. And then, you know, I would get like a cheap player. You know, everyone gets those, Crosby, like just to have it on. And right. I would listen to a band called Polar Bear Club. And I'd be like, wow, this sounds like crap on here. And then eventually you start figuring it out. And you see that there are better players and better needles. And, you know, right now the setup that I have in my apartment, you know, I have two, you know, pretty solid monitors and, you know, the record player works well. There's no issues with it. And it's just a good setup for an apartment. You know, I can't get really loud. I just want some clear sound on a low volume. And, you know, it's nice too, because when you have people coming over and you have company, or even if you're by yourself, it's a good way of kind of setting a mood and, you know, setting the tone where, you know, you can say, oh, this was a good side for now, and let me put on side B of this record, and, you know, I want to hear this. And, you know, now they're putting out so many compilations and things like that. Like, you know, you get now records that are being pressed now for, you know, 90s alternative music. And, you know, it's cool that it's coming back. But it's also making it so that now that it's more popular, it's more expensive.
Yeah. Some of it gets ridiculous. There's two things I listened to, from Billy Corgan from Smashing Pumpkins, podcast. He did put out a 3-album, whatever, blah, blah, blah. The one thing I found interesting from that is what he said was, and I've been looking for Melancholy 95. I was 15. So that album for me at that time was like amazing. But apparently you can't get these, you know, the older albums because vinyl is so in demand right now. They're having a hard enough time keeping up with the newer stuff that's coming out rather than doing reissues of older things. And then I just read an article, God, yesterday or so, that Metallica has bought its own vinyl printing.
Yes. Factory. Yeah. If anyone were going to do it, it makes sense that they did it, especially, you know, we come from the years of Napster where they were arguing about things like that. And, I mean, I remember when Tool came on to Spotify and Apple Music because they held out so long because they wanted people to buy the CDs and the records. And I was just talking to John about this, and he said, you know, a lot of 90s stuff is really expensive because vinyl wasn't super popular in the 90s. It just wasn't. You know, CDs were out. Those were what everyone was using. It was in car. Like, everyone bought CDs in the 90s. And, you know, the record pressings were so limited that it was tough to find. And now that it's been 30 years and it's coming back, it's really tough to find those records.
Well, you have to think back then, the vinyl pressings was fourth generation back. You had 8-track and then cassette and then CD quality, that, you know, people were 4 generations away from vinyl.
Well, cassettes are still being made too now, which is crazy to me.
I see that, and they're coming back. For me personally, you know, as a kid, I had a ton of cassettes. I just don't want to go back to cassettes. I don't see
that. Yeah. Soon we'll be back to VHS.
Yeah. I listened to Quentin Tarantino's podcast, and he's raving now about VHS. He's no longer on the film print for movies. Now everything's VHS for him. So, all right. So talking about vinyl, if you can think of the special albums you own or the most ridiculous amount of money that you spent on an album you needed to have?
I mean, so John and I are both spending a lot of money on records for these events too now.
Right.
So
you're almost at a point now, you're an LLC. You can start writing it off. Come on.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the idea. But we're buying a bunch of singles for certain things too, because I don't need a whole album of,
right,
I don't know, there were certain bands where you're like, I don't need that. I don't need the full album. And, you know, it's cool to get the popular song. I feel like the 90s was like the heyday. Oh, here's one. How Bizarre by, I think, OTC? What's that artist's name?
Oh, I know. I can see it. It was 3 letters, OMB or yeah,
something. Right. Some kind of acronym. But
right,
the album's $40. But really, all you like is all How Bizarre. So I don't need that. If I could find the single for, you know, $10, I'd rather that. So we get, you know, a lot of 45s. But I know that I had an original pressing of AFI's Sing the Sorrow that was really near and dear. And before they announced the repressing recently with the 20th anniversary, it was worth like $700, which was a lot. So, and it was a gift. So I was like, oh, this is great. But before we did an Unplugged event at Mimi's in Mount Kisco, that was another event we did. We were going to do, at that point, we're still considering, you know, if we should just do one album and listen to it and, you know, kind of set the mood. But instead we just brought whatever Unplugged albums we had, but I bought, it was like $200 for Alice in Chains Unplugged. And, you know, I haven't really had to spend a crazy amount. John's the one that I would say has done that because he has about 30 copies of Through Being Cool by Saves the Day. But he's one of those guys that needs the specific pressing and all of that. But yeah, I mean, I'd say AFI's Sing the Sorrow is still near and dear, even though now you can pre-order it. But even pre-orders, they take like 7 months. And it's crazy too, because now they're printing so many of them that look awesome, that plain black vinyl, you're like, ah, this isn't that cool anymore.
Right.
There's like splatter effects and these cool rings, and they separate things. And I watched a video of how they make it, and my mind is just blown. Like, I still don't understand it.
I get it. All right. So where do you go for your vinyl? Do you got a store you go to, or you do a lot of online? Do you do Discogs at all, searching that way?
Definitely. I use Discogs a lot. I mean, it's a great place when you want to find something really specific that isn't being reissued or isn't, right, you know, in popular demand where you're able to get it. I mean, Newberry has a pretty solid selection, but again, you know, they kind of hike up the prices a little bit and have their own, you know, Newberry issues. Tower Records is back and it's only online. So that's got some stuff too. You kind of have to know where to look.
Funny, and
you have
to know what you're looking for. I hate to interrupt you on that. It's not the people behind the original Tower Records. It's a different.
Well, they sold the name.
They sold the name. Bankrupt. Yeah. So
I
when I first saw that, I was all about it. Crazy Tower Records. And then I found out it wasn't real Tower.
Yeah. It's a shame too, because that, I mean, Tower Records, I would say, because you're from Westchester, right?
Originally North Bronx, but I grew up on City Island. So it's literally just
right there. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah. So I grew up in Yonkers.
Yep.
And there was a Tower Records right on Central Avenue.
Yep, right up on the hill there.
Exactly. And I used to go there as a kid, and I found out years later that you had to kind of like apply and study to work there. Like, you had to know your stuff. Mm-hmm. You had to make sure that you were not just pointing people in the direction of music, but you had to know you, and I hate to use the reference again, but you were the Pandora. You were the ones that if I came in and I'm 10 years old and I say, oh, I'm looking for, you know, AFI's Black Sails in the Sunset, they'd be like, okay, it's over here, but you should check these three out too. And you would scan the CD, you had the headset on, and you would be able to sample tracks and be like, oh, this sounds really cool. Yep. And you had these people that were like, it was basically like our own version of Empire Records, where like they loved music, they knew about it, and you would kind of be able to like get in your own world there. And that was kind of the influence too for this, because, you know, it's nice having that. It's nice having people that know things about music to kind of tell people that don't know so much about it, and not from like, you know, an entitled version of it. More of just like spreading the knowledge. And, you know, Tower Records was a place like that, where even as a child, like, I'd go there and see, you know, that they knew their stuff and they would suggest stuff. And I'd be like, oh, this is so cool. And my dad would be like, oh, wow. Like, wow. Did you thank him? Like, you know, I was a kid. I was 10 years old.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Now, if we're talking those old days, the ones that stick out to me was Tower on Central Ave. There was the Sam Goody in the Cross County that I remember going to a lot, but that was when you're just going out for the popular release. They had tons of stuff. And then when you brought up the scanning, I remember the Virgin Mega Store down in Times Square had the same thing.
Huge.
Yeah. And there was just so much music. Well,
those places too were like popular enough where there's YouTube footage of Pearl Jam playing at the Tower Records on Central Avenue.
Yep.
And there was a record store in Yonkers called Rockin' Rex's. And I was too young to go there and know about it. But right, like bands like AFI played there. And you had these like places, like there's a place in LA called Amoeba. And Amoeba is still like a huge record store that has bands come out and play. And there are still places like that. It's just, it's tough to find in certain areas because it's just not as popular. But now that it's gaining popularity, some of those places never died. And they became such a name where, like, you know, I used to say to people like, ah, oh, Tower Records, you know, went bankrupt. It'd be cool to like reopen it in that same spot.
Yeah, there was a fantastic documentary on Tower Records. I think it was on HBO, and I'm going back probably 5-10 years ago when it was out. And it went through the history of the owner and how that became the spot in LA. And I think it still exists in Japan, but unfortunately, yeah, the big ones like that. Now you really just have niche small shops now, and each shop kind of specializes in its own kind of world, and and it's tough. So,
I mean, there's cool spots. I mean, there's Clockwork Records in Hastings, which is a cool shop. The guy used to be a New York City detective, I think, he was big with like the Misfits.
Yes, he's very big in the punk world there. Yeah, I
mean, yes, huge into the punk world. And then you have Dark Side Records in Newburgh. That's a cool spot. They got a lot of stuff there. You know, there's just little record stores. That there's one in Larchmont now. They're popping up all over the place.
So, where was I? I had a question. I'm trying to see here. Okay, is there a vinyl, a dream piece that you want, you just can't get a hold of?
I mean, there's a bunch. There's so many where it would just be really cool to get your hands on it, or, you know, like, because so many are being repressed and reissued, you know, it's tough to pick specific ones, I'd say. But I mean, you know, there are some that are on Discogs that are a ton of money that I could probably eventually buy, but you know, it would be a better question to say, what are some records that you'd want to get your hands on that aren't an exorbitant amount of money right now? I mean, there's a band, and it's not even one of my favorite bands. There's a band called Nightmare of You, and they were pretty good. They had one album that was like really solid, and I listened to a lot in high school. And it pops up on Discogs, and it's like $100, $150. And like, that's not that much money. No. But it's just crazy because like when the reissue came out, I think it was probably like 5 or 6 years ago, it was like $20. So, you know, to see that kind of rate of return on someone buying something that wasn't that much, I mean, it just goes to show you how expensive things are getting. And that is not a knock on the band. I think that was a great album. But it's just crazy how sometimes these albums come out and people will buy them. And then some people don't even want them for themselves. They'll buy like 6 copies of a record, keep one of them, and then basically do the StubHub thing and resell them just to, you know, make a profit. And, you know, it's unfortunate because that would be, you know, there's some that are really cool, but they're just marked up a ton. You know, Faith No More's, I think, I don't remember if the album's name was Epic, but, you know, you find stuff like that where you're like, oh, I would love to have that. And, you know, they're just super expensive right now.
The next thing I wanted to talk to you about, and I'll start with my taste in music, is I grew up, my formative music years were in the 90s alternative scene, right? And from there, that led me back to, you know, in the classic rock era. And I grew up, you know, as a kid, I was always listening to, from my parents, you know, 80s pop music. So I loved that. And so from the 90s stuff, I've gone back more recently to their influences. So I've gotten into a lot of late 80s, early 90s alternative, as well as there's moments where I'll get into 70s singer-songwriter stuff. There's moments where I was never a big 90s hip hop fan. Now I've really listened to a lot of that and enjoy it. You had mentioned earlier AFI a lot and on emo nights. So am I, you know, I'm assuming, and you should never assume, but I'm thinking you kind of had a lot of that emo inspiration in your life. And
No. Yeah. I was a snob about stuff in high school. So I remember I went to a prep school and I came from being influenced by, you know, some of the guys that specifically one kid I went to middle school with, his older cousin was in a screamo band. Mm-hmm. So he made me a mixtape once when I was in like seventh grade, and it had Minor Threat. It had Dead Kennedys. It had all like the, you know, original punk bands, and then some local stuff too. Right. Where it had, there's a band that I don't think they're still around. I think actually I heard someone may have passed from them, but World Inferno Friendship Society was like this, like Broadway style, like art punk folk gypsy stuff. It was really cool. And I just remember being in like seventh grade, and, you know, obviously you kind of have your music shaped by the people around you too. I mean, my dad, I grew up, he was, you know, in his late 30s, in the time where you'd have like Dookie and you had like, you know, Stone Temple Pilots and Soundgarden. So he would listen to that kind of stuff. My mom would listen to, you know, stuff you'd hear on the radio, pop music, right. Show tunes. And, you know, in high school though, I remember going in knowing like real punk and looking at it that way. And these kids were wearing, you know, like band t-shirts that were pretty popular and, you know, into like the American Idiot stuff and like the more mainstream of what people thought punk was. And I just remember like buying Creepers and wearing skin tight jeans and being like, that's not punk. And then my sister actually dated somebody who really loves Blink-182. And, I remember I was at SUNY Purchase at a show, for Big D and the Kids Table. Cause they were, everyone I think has a ska phase at some point. And I'm sitting outside in these skin tight jeans and these giant shoes. And I have all like this punk stuff on and I'm sitting there and I'm like, dude, what? And her boyfriend at the time walks over. He goes, hey, are you all right? I said, dude, what the hell am I doing? And he goes, I don't know. And started laughing really hard. And then I realized that like, you don't have to present yourself to look like you listen to a specific type of music. Like I don't need to, you know, have the studs and, you know, everything going on and prove to people that I know who SSD Control is, you know what I mean? Where you kind of grow out of it. And I had a friend that like showed me, I mean, some people don't, I'm not judging, you know, whoever wants to do whatever and express themselves. I mean, I bleached my hair 2 years ago. It's some stuff you're just always going to do, especially I'm covered in tattoos. So I don't know what, you know, what I'm talking about, but a buddy of mine in high school showed me like Regina Spektor and Elliott Smith. And I remember from there, I started to venture into other things like that and, you know, allow myself to not just listen to, you know, stuff from 1979 to 1984 and consider myself, you know, just punk. So I don't even remember what the actual question was, but like, I know that the formative, if I were emo. No, I actually made fun of emo kids. And then once I got to that,
I was trying to gauge more into where your core musical.
It was punk. It was punk and hardcore. I mean, when everyone was into ska, like I listened to it for a while, and then I got into bands like Bane and Unearth and, you know, hardcore bands. And I was the one out of all my friends that listened to hardcore music. So, you know, I always liked that real, like, you know, Madball and, you know, Incendiary was a little bit later on for me, but like, I was always the one that was into like hardcore. And then I got into pop punk and, you know, college was a lot of pop punk and a lot of, you know, that phase of emo. But I remember I made fun of people that liked My Chemical Romance. And now, you know, I have two of their records on vinyl. Like it's, you got to be willing to listen to other stuff. I mean, even I'm wearing an H2O t-shirt right now. Mm-hmm. And I know that they came out with an album a few years ago and, you know, Toby in it has a line about like, you know, you basically talking about like, allow yourself to listen to what people would call guilty pleasures. Like if you like it, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
And you know, there's nothing more punk than being like, I like Taylor Swift. Like it's okay because it's not, you're not supposed to like it. And that's kind of rad to me when you're like, oh, I like that song.
I was on board with you until the Taylor Swift thing. I draw the line at Taylor Swift.
Listen, she's a very talented musician.
I would support you up until the mid 2000s where, you know, all the her and Katy Perry drama and the fact that I even know this is ridiculous. That's where I draw the Taylor Swift.
Got Lady Gaga. I mean, you know, stuff like that is always so good. There's good songs that people can put out. I mean, there's some artists that I'll never like anything that they do. Like even in the alternative space, like people I know love Bayside. I'm just not a fan of their music. I respect them. Like this is not shots fired and I don't want people to think I'm talking crap. It's just, there's certain artists and it's weird to me that there's certain stuff that you'll hear and you'll be like, nope, I'm never going to like this. And it's weird because you should. Like it's like being around a group of friends and there's that one person that, you know, they all like and they all hang out with. And then the two of you just never got along. And you're like, it's not that you dislike each other. It's just you've never had that friendship there.
Right. That's funny you brought up Bayside. I was once taken to a Bayside concert and
But listen, again, a lot of my close friends really like them. And I hear that I should like them. And I know that like the guitar and the music behind it is really good, you know, for that genre of music. And like, they're one of the major bands that people are really into. And I really don't want this to come across as me talking crap about Bayside. It's just, it's like a weird thing where like, I don't know why. I can't put two and two together. I don't understand it. And then there's sometimes you have bands like that that you don't like. Mm-hmm. And then years later you listen to them and you're like, oh no, wait, I do like this band.
Right. And it's amazing. And most of it, I find most of that was the popular stuff that I shut down. It's popular. And then you find the merit in it years later, which I found a lot with like 90s hip hop that I just growing up, I couldn't stand it because that was just forced down your throat. And now I see the merit of how good it was. It's funny. I'll compare one thing and people just don't understand it. But the way you feel about a band like Bayside or whatever is the way I feel about hockey. I go to hockey games, and when I'm at a hockey game, I'm like, why do I not love this more? It's tailored to me. It's constant movement. They're beating the crap out of each other. It's fun when you're there. It play, you know, music that speaks to me and revs me up. And then I leave a hockey game, and it's like I could never think about hockey again. And it's like I just don't get it because it's something I should love.
I'm a hockey fan, so but I get it.
Yeah,
it's weird how things work. It's just it's interesting where, and you nailed it though. Like you have there's a whole clothing company called Violent Gentlemen, and it's huge in like the punk and hardcore scene, and it's hockey. It's hockey themed clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And you have bands like Every Time I Die, or you know, I think Straight from the Path have done things with them, and like it's supposed to be in this group, like this. Whole like punk hardcore, you know, that whole alternative crowd, like hockey's their thing. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense because it's almost like the alt sport where you know you do have band like I've heard bands where I'm like, oh no way, they're playing Balance and Composure at, you know, for the Kings, and like you'll hear the Rangers always play 45 by Gaslight Anthem at their games. So it's cool that it is part, like they know who their audience is.
Right. Speaking of live stuff, live shows, do you keep up with live shows lately, or is that something?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so sometimes what I'll do is I'll buy tickets to something, and then day of or moments before, I'll just be like, I don't really feel like going to Brooklyn right now. And it sucks because like sometimes I'll end up wishing I went.
Right.
And, you know, I just chalk it up to depression and knowing that like that's one of the side effects that you have where you're like you look forward to something up until you're not like you're really supposed to. And there's a couple of shows that I'm going to that are coming up. I mean, bands are realizing I was actually just supposed to go to the AFI's 20th anniversary show in LA. Oh, and then with work and things, I couldn't do it. It just didn't make sense to fly out for a weekend. And you know, I saw the post and had FOMO for that. But I think in a couple weeks, I'm seeing a Silent Majority anniversary show, which I'm really excited about. I'm seeing No Pressure coming up, which I saw them when they put out their new album down in Brooklyn. You know, it's you got to just keep up. And now I didn't have social media before this. Like I was very much against it. And now I run it for the page basically, and it does help to keep up with like reissues of records and what shows are coming out and when they're going on sale and where the like what the bands are doing and if there's new music coming out. So like I see why people like it, and I see that it does have its use case. I mean, I had a friend just send me a message for a page I wasn't following, and it was a repressing of a record that I wanted, so I'm able to order that. So a long-winded answer. Yes, there are shows that I'm still going,
I totally
but I'm in the back now.
Yeah. I get 100% about the day of, or it just seems like this mountain to climb. Sometimes you're excited. You want to go. And once you break through that and you get there, you have a good time. But for me, it's always, because living in New York, everything's got to be on a weeknight because they know it's going to sell out. And I stand by this. They know it's going to sell out on a weeknight. Why even worry about doing it on a weekend? So,
yeah.
I always worry tomorrow's going to suck. I'm not a great person in the morning anyway. So getting a couple hours of sleep on top of having a good time most of the night, that's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. And for, you know, so many of these shows, you know, I listen to a lot of it could be aggressive music, and mm-hmm. you kind of have to be in the headspace for it too. Where, like, I mean, I went to see Incendiary do a 10-year anniversary show and of one of their releases, and it was awesome. Like, and I was psyched to go there, and it was aggressive and awesome, and it was great to see, and like I really had a great time, and you know, my friend came with me. And then sometimes, you know, you're kind of not in that headspace, or you know, you're kind of out of it, and it's, you know, a super heavy band like mm-hmm. the Acacia Strain, and I'll be like, I really don't feel like getting yelled at for 2 hours. We're like, that's basically what it is.
I got a funny story for you, and it's totally against everything you're saying, because it's in the pop world, right? And it's a COVID story. So right as COVID hits, and it's in early March, we had gotten tickets for Hall & Oates at Madison Square.
I love Hall & Oates.
It was a great show. And then literally the next week, COVID shut everything down. So much to the point that we just thought COVID was probably just flying all around our heads in the garden. And then COVID hits, and I had a couple shows that were planned for that year all get canceled. And I'm sitting there saying, shit, my last concert ever, not that it wasn't good, but my last concert ever can't be Hall & Oates.
Listen, I would take that. I would take it, and I would be happy with it, because Hall & Oates rules.
They do.
I think they're great.
They
I
do.
Mean, we're
going to
play so much
show.
Hall & Oates. They're fantastic. And what was your first show back after COVID? Do you remember?
It was, I want to say it was the See Here Now Festival down in Asbury Park.
Oh, that's a great, that's where my first show back was, in Asbury
really?
Park.
Were you there?
Not for that. I was in the summer, and I went to see, what was that, months later. It was Rise Against, which they're good. My cousin's a huge fan of music. Let's go. So it was Rise Against. Who else played? A couple other bands. I'm forgetting the name of one, and I'm going to be pissed at myself that I didn't say it. But a few bands were playing. And it was cool, because you were there and you were just like nervous, but it was outside, but you were still freaking out a little bit.
Right. But you kind of had that mental band-aid, that psychological band-aid that was like, but we're outside, so it's okay.
Yeah. And we're all happy to be here, I think.
Yeah.
I think we're happy to be here.
Yeah.
And then you were just kind of out there and you're like, oh my God, this feels so foreign now.
Yeah,
because you were afraid of doing anything for so long, and then going to shows, like, I remember thinking, will they ever exist again? Will we ever do something like that? And then really quickly they did.
Now it's like nothing ever happened.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you joining me today. It's a great conversation here, and I'll give you another chance to plug your baby here.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. Absolutely. It was a pleasure. You know, people should check us out for sure. We have our Instagram page at New York Vinyl and Brew. We'll put up, you know, whatever things are coming up, usually about a month out. You know, we hope to keep things going. You know, we're always listening to people's suggestions. So if anyone ever has an idea of a place where you'd want to see us pop up and come through, then, you know, we'd be more than happy to go there. We're just, you know, open to whatever. It's still in its infancy. I mean, it's been less than a year since I started the Instagram page, and our first event was in July of last year, and we did like one a month maybe. So it's still kind of developing and growing, and we're figuring things out. So, you know, any suggestions we're always open to, and what people want to see, you know, we definitely want to help do that too. So, you know, I appreciate you having us on here.
Yeah,
or me rather.
Yeah, no, I get it. March 31st, your next event?
Yes, March 31st is Run and Hide in Portchester. That's 90s night. It's going to be a lot of fun. We got some cool stuff, so it'll be cool.
As we were talking earlier, I'm going to do my hardest to make it. You know,
they have great prosciutto
city.
Sandwiches.
It's okay.
They got great prosciutto, so I'm, you know, I got to throw that in there.
Sounds good.
Great, awesome. Great beer too, obviously. But
awesome. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate
it. Cool.
And thank you again for joining the Smartass Supernova podcast. I hope you join us next time, where we're going to continue to keep individuality alive by talking about the music and movies that we love. Thanks.